The newspapers are reporting great hopeful studies on circumcision and curbing HIV transmissions in Africa. And there's talk of hospitals offering the service at no or low cost, which is all fantastic and very much needed, of course. And I can't quite get this next thought out without it coming across as a punchline, although let it be known that I'm very serious. But every time I read something on this, I can't help but wonder, what are they going to do with all that foreskin? Can it be used for grafting or compost? I would go one step further and ask that you write in and tell me any industrious ideas on what to do with a few extra truckloads of foreskin, but that's a loaded request, so you just think about it and keep that to yourself. And I realise that this is potentially a less than ideal forum for such discourse, this podcast, but then again, it's my podcast. So good evening. It's Tuesday, the 19th of December, 2006, and it's Miette's entirely appropriate bedtime story podcast. Mr. Blue by Robert Creeley. I don't want to give you only the grotesqueness, not only what it then seemed. It is useless enough to remember, but to remember only what is unpleasant seems particularly foolish. I suspect that you have troubles of your own, and since you have, why bother you with more? Mine against yours, that seems a waste of time. But perhaps mine are also yours, and if that's so, you'll find me a sympathetic listener. A few nights ago, I wrote down some of this, trying to think of what had happened. What had really happened, like they say? It seemed then that some such effort might get me closer to an understanding of the thing than I was. So much that was not directly related had got in, and I thought a little noting of what was basic to the problem might be in order. That is, I wanted to analyse it, to try to see where things stood. I'm not at all sure that it got to anything, this attempt, because I'm not very good at it. But you can look for yourselves. Number one, that dwarves, gnomes, midgets are, by the fact of their size, intense. Number two, that dwarves, gnomes, midgets cause people larger than themselves to appear wispy, insubstantial, cardboard. Number three, that all size tends towards big, but in the case of dwarves, gnomes, midgets. But perhaps best to begin at the beginning. And to begin, there are two things that you must know. The first of these is that I am myself a tall man, somewhat muscular, though not unpleasantly so. I have brown hair and brown eyes, although that is not altogether to the point here. What you should remember is that I am a big man, as it happens, one of the biggest in town. My wife is also large. That is the second. But she is not so much large as large-boned. A big frame. I sound as though I were selling her, but I'm not. I mean, I don't want to sound like that, as though I were trying to impress you that way. It is just that I don't want to do. That is, make you think that I am defending her, or whatever it is that I may sound like to you. In short, she is an attractive woman, and I don't think I am the only one who would find her so. She has, like myself, brown hair, but it is softer, very soft, and she wears it long, almost to her waist, in heavy braids. But it is like her eyes, I mean, there is that lightness in it, the way it brushes against the back when she is walking. It makes me feel rather blundering, heavy to look at her. It seems to me my step jars the house when I walk through a room where she is. We have been married 5 years. 5 years doesn't seem in itself a very long time. so much goes so quickly, so many things that I can think of now that then, when they were happening, I could hardly take hold of. And where she comes into it, these things that had to do with her, I find I missed, perhaps, a lot that I should have held to. At least I should have tried. But like it or not, it's done with. Little good to think of it now. I did try, though, to do what I could. She never seemed unhappy, and she didn't even now. Perhaps upset when the baby was sick, but generally speaking, she's a level woman. Calm, good sense. But perhaps that's where I'm wrong, that I have that assumption, that I think I know what she is like. Strange that a man shouldn't know his wife, but I suppose it could be so, that even having her around him for 5 years, short as they are, he could still be strange to her and she to him. I think I know about what she'd do if this or that happened. If I were to say this to her, or something about something, or what people usually talk about. It is not pleasant doubting your own knowledge, since that seems all you have. If you lose that, or take it as somehow wrong, the whole thing goes to pieces. Not much use trying to hold it together after that. Still, I can't take seriously what's happened. I can't, but still I do. I wish it were different, that in some way I were out of it, shaken, but at least out. But here I am, the same place. It was raining, a bad night for anything. Not hard, but enough to soak you if you were out in it for very long. We thought it would probably be closed, but when we got there, all the lights were going, and I could see some people up in the Ferris wheel, probably wet to the skin. Still, they looked as if they were having fun, and some of their shouts reached us as we went through the gate and into the main grounds. It was fairly late, about 10 or so, another reason why I had thought it would be closed. Another day, and the whole works would be gone, and that's why she had insisted. I feel, usually, uncomfortable in such places. I don't like the crowds, at least not the noise of them. They never seem to stop, always jumping, moving, and the noise. Any one of them alone, or two or three, that's fine. As it happened, we went by a number of our friends who yelled at us, "Fine night," or some such thing. I can't remember exactly what the words were, but I didn't like them. Or didn't like them then, with that around them, the noise and their excitement. No reason, perhaps, to think that she knew where she was going. I didn't. I think we followed only the general movement of the people, where they were going. It was packed, and very difficult to go anywhere but where you were pushed. So we were landed in front of the tent without much choice, and stood listening to the barker to see what might be happening. I can say, and this is part of it, that I didn't want to go in, for several reasons. The main one is that I don't like freaks. I don't like to look at them or be near them. They seem to have a particular feeling around them, which is against me altogether. A good many times I've seen others staring without the slightest embarrassment at some hunchback or some man with a deformity that puts him apart from the rest. I don't see how they can do it, how they can't look without any reaction but curiosity. For myself, I only want to get away. But this time she decided. It seemed that not very much could be inside the tent. They had advertised a midget, a knife-thrower, a man with some snakes, and one or two other things. Nothing like the large circuses, and nothing the more horrible things that such might throw in. So I got the tickets, and we followed a few of the others in. They were just finishing a performance. It was so packed at the front that we stood at the back, waiting until the first crowd was ready to leave. I felt tired myself. It must have been close to 11 at that point. It seemed like an effort there was no reason for. But she enjoyed it, looked all around at everyone, smiled at those she knew, waved to some, kept talking to me, and I would say something or other to hide my own feeling. Perhaps I should have been straight with her, told her I was tired and ducked out. It would have saved it, or at least got me free. But I kept standing there, with her, waiting for the show to finish and another to start. It did, soon, the first crowd moving out, and our own coming up to take its place. The man on the platform had got down at the end, and now we waited for him to come back and the new show to begin. They were talking around us, sounding a little nervous the way most will at those times when something is being waited for, though one can't say with exactness. At this point I was almost as expectant as the others. Nothing else to be, perhaps. In any event, I had got over my other feeling. The first act was a cowboy with a lariat. Rip tricks. Not much, but he was good with it. Could make it spin all kinds of loops, shrinking them, making them grow right while we watched him. It was good fun, I thought. Not much, but enough. At the end he started stamping with one foot. And at the same time he slipped his loop off and on it, and brought it up around both feet at the end, jumping and grinning. I think there might have been some music with it, something for the beat, but it doesn't matter. The man told us he was deaf, couldn't hear a thing. There didn't seem to be much point in telling us this, but I guess we're apt to like that adding of what we don't expect. We enjoyed it, the both of us. It's not often that we can get out like that to see anything, and after the first I forgot about being tired and liked it as much as she did. The next act was the knife thrower. He could put them all in a circle no bigger than my hand, 8 of them, so that they shivered there with a force which surprised me, and each time one hit, she gripped my arm, and I laughed at her nervousness. But it was a funny thing, even so. Then came the snake act, which wasn't up to the others, or simply that dullness in it, that snakes much the same. Doped, I expect, though perhaps I was wrong to think so. Then, sort of a juggling act, a man with a number of coloured balls and odd-shaped sticks, which he had set into a strange kind of movement, tossing them one after the other, until he must have had 10, somehow, going, and all this with an intentness that made us almost clap then, as they did move through his hands. Altogether a wonder, it seemed, his precision, and how it kept him away from us, even though some stood no more than a few feet away. Until at last he stopped them one by one, and then the last smiled at us, and we all gave him a good hand. It is here that I leave, or as I go back to it this time, or this way, that is, now I make my way out, through the rest of them, my hand on her arm, with just that much pressure to guide her, or that is my intention. Perhaps the lights that made my eyes ache begin to, or simply that it's now, this point, that I'm happy, that it's ourselves, the two of us, have come to sort of feel of it that makes us so. Just that I am now running, that is just that I do. What she had been doing, or going to that, it was a cigarette she had asked me for, and I reached into my pocket for them, had got out the pack, and given her one, and then lit a match for her. She bent a little, got it lit, then looked back to the platform where the juggler had been. But the trick, that it's him who's there, the midget, as such he is named, but the size, it's that which hits me. At first, that he isn't small, or looking. He must be 5 feet, or perhaps a little smaller. 4 feet, but not small. The eyes. Catch. Get me so into it that they are so void in the head. Shaded. The shades like changing shadows, colours coming in to want to be filled, seem huge. He looks at all of us, moves over us so, to bite, to have something to be there to bite. But nothing certainly to make of it more than what I could see. Would be, that is, the barker introduced him, and we stood, as we had, in that group in front of him, the boards which made the platform. That roughness and the poles on which the lights were strung, the wire sagging between them, that is, what it is had come in. And this was, to be not, or to make it not as it had been, if it were, as it was, the same place, which I couldn't say or put my finger on then, but waited like any of the rest. I could see the muscle of his arm where the sleeve had been pulled up, rolled above it. And with his movement, that slightness of tension made him lift it slightly from time to time. The muscle tightened, and it looked hard, big, below the roll of the sleeve. As my own would. He was smiling, that face somewhat broad, well-shaped, the smile somewhat dreamy, or like sleep, that vagueness which couldn't be understood. The barker had laughed. The pitch of it rolled out on us, and I wondered if he was as drunk as he looked. He was calling the midget cute, saying, "A cute little fellow." He made a joke of it, looking at the women and laughing, saying, "Who would like to take him home?" There was laughing. They liked the joke, and he carried it further, sensing their tolerance, and played it up. It was the joke he seemed intent on making us remember, the cuteness. The idea of the women. Taking the cigarettes out of my pocket, the pack crumpled. I held it out to her, but she was intent on what was before us, and I expect that I was myself, and only did what I did, took them out, to somehow break it, to make it break down. It seemed that is, the gesture, or an act, an action, so meant to serve double, to be a break. But what was it, that is, more than the taking, just that of the cigarettes, which I didn't want to smoke, had even just put one out? I looked then around me at the rest of them, and they were looking at him, the midget, and I couldn't see one that noticed I looked, or gave the least sign. The midget stood still. Beside the barker, who staggered a little under the lights, moved from one side to the other, his face to us, that drunkenness. He was still on the joke, fumbling, and it wore down on us, the weight of it kept at us, and I wanted to get out. There seemed breaks, lengths of silence, hung there, made the other, the midget, the whole of it in his own silence, which he kept as a distance around him, that the eyes made actual. I would have gone, or, as I think I should have, in spite of it, simply slipped out, when the others weren't looking, just left and waited for outside. I can't see that she would have been hurt, that is, I would think, or think I would have that right to, that it would make no difference to her, that is, that she would understand my going, seeing that it had begun to tire me, even became painful to stay. I think of it so being such that no difference could be in it, since she was enjoying herself, or it so it seemed. I tried to, but the people around pressed too tight, pushed me from the back, all forward, to the one on the platform in front of us. Not the barker. I knew that much, but the other who pulled them kept them all, because the barker had somehow fallen altogether to pieces. Had just the joke he hung on to, and that was played out. But then he switched it, perhaps feeling it hard, and turned to the midget, and said, "But you should like to have some say in this. Which one would you like?" The midget turned, then seemed to pull himself out of it, the distance, out of nothing, the eyes pulled in to focus, to grow somehow smaller, larger. The eyes went over us. The voice, when it came, was breath, a breathing, but way back in, wire, tight, taut, the scream, and I couldn't hear it, saw only his finger move to point at her, beside me, and wanted to say, "He's looking at you," but she was turned away from me, as though laughing, but struck, hit. I looked, a flash sideways, as it then happened. Looked, he looked at me. Cut that hit, jagged, and I had gone then into it, and that was almost that. But she said then, she had seen him earlier that same day, as he was opening, standing by a store, near the door, I think, as it had opened, and she, there, across the street, saw him motion. The gesture then, a dance, shuffle, the feet crooked, and the arms as now loose, and it was before, as before, but not because of this, that made it, or I thought, so made it, was it, or it was that I hung to, when, the show over, they motioned us out, and I pushed a way for her out through the crowd.